This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
That's right. You're with Lefty Pinkos. It's Brian and Kath here. We're back in the studio together.
Yeah.
But tonight we've got a few extra special guests, haven't we, Kath?
Yeah.
We've got Emma and our podcaster, Lauren, who is going to be joining us tonight on air because we've got a few announcements to make tonight. I mean, there's been some good news in the media when it comes to, I guess, Tony Abbott mentioning that he's dropping the changes that he's proposed with George Brandis to the Racial Discrimination Act. So we'll kind of celebrate that little win.
Can we take any responsibility for some of that?
Oh, I'd like to think so, that we're getting news out there about why it's dumb and why they shouldn't change the laws and there's protections there for people that shouldn't be messed with. But, yeah, the federal government have dropped their proposed changes, which is a great thing. So we'll have a bit of a chat about that. But also last week's show, The Tasty Raid, we celebrated, or we're celebrating, rather, the 20th anniversary. This Saturday there'll be a dance floor brouhaha down at Chasers. And Emma, our new co-host that we're going to bring into Lefty Pinkos, was going to talk about, I guess, the police apology to the Tasty Raid 20 years ago. But I guess, yeah, I mean, I don't want to make the announcement, Kath. So what I'm going to do is, can you maybe talk about this week's show?
Well, what Brian is sort of hedging around is that I'm going to be leaving Lefty Pinkos in Brian's very capable hands. Tonight you're going to meet the new co-presenter for Lefty Pinkos. I have loved doing the show. We'll talk about that a bit more in the course of the show because it's mainly about me tonight.
We're going to be
digging into my past and my background, why we're here, why where the show came from, because I've been offered more work and I just can't sort of make this all work and I will miss it very much. So tonight we've got, a few announcements, meet the new team and say goodbye to me.
And also, I guess, it's kind of funny because Kath and I, whenever we've lined up a guest for Lefty Pinkos, we've sort of threatened, we've said, if this person doesn't come through, we've kind of tentatively booked somebody and they're, we're not sure whether they're going to be here or not. And we've always had this backup plan that's, basically if somebody falls through, we'll just do each other.
Because we're both political animals and it's like, we've both got stories to tell. And so that was always our fallback. And tonight we are making the program we always threatened that we would.
Yes, we'll get to know Kath Duncan, my co-host, who's leaving us. But yeah, Kath's had an amazing life. I mean, she's been a brilliant presenter, co-presenter. She's actually taught me a lot in their studios
at Joy.
And you've taught me heaps. And
I've
you've actually
learned heaps from you.
It's about you, Kath. I want to just talk about you. But but no, you've been a fantastic co-host. So tonight we're going to, get into Kath Duncan, get into the nitty-gritty. Because it's funny because, we've avoided talking about ourselves. It's a nice position to be in as an interviewer. And you don't have to kind of talk about yourself. You just sort of throw it at the guests. So tonight we'll get into Kath Duncan and we might throw out a few questions that she has thrown at our guests, like sex life, values, where they came from. It's going to be a nice foray into Kath Duncan. But also, I just want to introduce our co-host this week for Lefty Pinkos, Emma. Emma, do you want to just say hi to our listeners out there?
Hi, listeners.
Yeah, maybe a bit about yourself, who you are, where you're from, what you know.
And darling, put the mic in front of yourself. We'll start with the beginning. We'll start at the beginning. There you go.
I'm originally from Melbourne. Have been a member of Joy for the last couple of years.
Woohoo! We love that.
Enjoy listening to the station and have wanted to get involved for a while, but there hasn't been an opportunity come up. And for me, this is an opportunity to become more involved with the LGBTI community. I'm becoming more political as I'm getting older, so it's a good opportunity to sort of explore that a bit more as well.
And you've been on Joy on the airwaves before with Greg Hughes, because that's where the connection came from. When Kath flagged that she wanted to bow out because she's got some stuff on her plate that she wants to deal with, we sort of put the word out there and Greg Hughes came to the party and you've been on air with Greg. Tell us about that.
Greg hosts Ad Lib to Fade on a Sunday night now, but for the Joy and birthday week last year. I co-hosted Ad Lib to Fade with Greg. Had a great time. And since then, yeah, I mean, it's fantastic that now this opportunity has come up.
Best show.
Yeah,
I shouldn't say that.
Yeah, it's probably one of the best shows on the Joy 94.9 program, Greg.
Well, we would say that.
And Lauren's here. Lauren, you may know her as our podcaster. How are you going, Lauren?
Yeah, not too bad.
Yeah, you're getting excited about Grill and Kath this week?
Yeah, it's going to be a change. It's going to be good.
Yeah. And look, Lauren has just been fantastic doing some producing, getting our podcast together. You know, it's just a great team at the moment. It's hard to leave.
Yeah, we're pretty lucky. So it's going to be a jam-packed show this week. I'm going to kick off with some music that Kath has selected. What's our first track, Kath?
I think it's a David Bowie, isn't
That's
it?
That's right.
The first one?
It's Modern Love.
So, oh, yeah, baby. Yeah,
this one's going to Kath and her listeners.
Geriatric love.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Lefty Pinkos. Oh, I'm really firing tonight. Kath Duncan with you and Brian's in the studio. Emma's with us. Lauren's with us. It's the entire Lefty Pinkos team.
And what was that track, Kath?
David Bowie's
Bowie. You're a bit of a Bowie fan, yeah?
Well, but David Bowie was God in the 80s. I mean, I was born in 61, so, like, I'm ancient, you know. And I grew up when Bowie was, you know, releasing these albums, you know, like, I remember. I think I was too young for Young Americans, but whatever the next ones were after that, whatever. Scary Monsters, blah, 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 all those albums. And we used to...
You're pointing at me like I know, because I'm not that... I mean, I'm old, but I miss Bowie, actually, yeah.
Well, we used to study his lyrics for meaningfulness.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, that he's my youth, David Bowie.
Yep. Now, we're going to chat about this Tasty Raid that we presented last week. It's been great getting some feedback from our listeners,
listeners.
Yeah, it was a really interesting show, wasn't it? I mean, Kath couldn't join us, but...
I heard the podcast. It was awesome.
Yeah, it was a really, we walked out of the studio going, yeah, that was... We nailed that one. And as a result of our podcast, the Victorian... No, I'm kidding.
No. I wish.
No. The Victorian police have actually apologised as part of
publicly.
The raid. So, yeah, but you've looked into it a bit, Emma. Do you want to just tell our listeners about it?
Yeah, saw some media coverage today that Lucinda Nolan, who's the acting Victoria Police Chief Commissioner, issued a public apology last night for the raid. That apology was to the people who were there and also more broadly to the LGBTI community as well. So I think that's a positive step. Some of the comments that I've seen around that today have expressed a bit of disappointment that it's taken 20 years for that apology to be given. But in the lead up to the anniversary party and event this weekend, I think that it's a positive step by the police.
Maybe we'll see some police on the dance floor. Not to give anything away on behalf of Gavin Campbell, but I hear there's going to be police strippers or something. So.
Oh, that sounds nice.
It sounds fabulous.
I think I'm going to go.
Yeah?
I'd like to go, yeah. Yeah.
Actually, yeah, well, I got my invite in the mail the other day, and so it's all kind of happening, and I need a date, actually, Kath, so how's about it?
Looks like us be each other again. Let's do it.
Yeah, like radio husband and wife.
Let's go.
I need a date too for it, Kath, so you can have your choice between Brian.
Actually, yeah.
You
know. Lauren, you're a bit too young for the party, aren't you? But.
Yeah, just a tad.
Oh, well. Yes. Maybe there'll be a 30th anniversary. We'll be there in our walking frames. Well, I will be. Brian, of course, will still be bouncing around.
Yes, that's right. And I guess another significant moment with that happened today was the federal government backed down from the Racial Discrimination Act changes.
I can't believe they've done this.
Yeah, it's amazing.
What happened? Do you know anything about why they did that?
Basically, George Brandis, our Attorney General, went through a process of, you know, seeking submissions from the community about the proposed changes. They were a bit iffy about what the wording might be, and they were focusing on Section 18C.
Yep.
Basically, I mean, people have actually called it the Bolt change in law. So it's actually, you know, they're suggesting that it came about, or its provenance was through Andrew Bolt, that right-wing nutter columnist that is with the Herald Sun.
Mm.
But George Brandis...
They're doing him a favour, and obviously they've decided not...
Yeah, they've kind of realised that, you know, they shouldn't change the Racial Discrimination Act. And we're just sort of theorising about it when during that Bowie track and looking at, I guess, you know, reasons behind it could be that Tony Abbott is pretty, he's not faring too well in the polls. Mm. He's actually worse off than than Gillard was at her worst, at her worst moment.
Oh, and that is music to my ears.
Kath was like,
I just screamed.
Yeah, exactly. All her Christmases came at once. but yeah, they're not faring too well in the polls, the old LNP party. So and yeah, so they're backing away from that, and they're calling it a leadership thing. When, you know, I mean, leadership, Tony, would, you know, in our multicultural society, would be to honour protections around the Racial Discrimination Act. So it's a good thing that they're not going to change it, that they're backing down from these proposed changes.
And I'm surprised by that.
Yeah,
happily surprised, actually.
It's kind of interesting because even like with, you know, look at refugee issues and how they've shrouded any media interest or any media coverage of, I guess, boat arrivals or asylum seekers. under the RDA changes or the proposed changes, they've actually kind of got all these submissions publicly. They've called for them, and then they've just basically housed them in like a shroud of mystery again. So people haven't been able to access the voices or the various voices. But yeah, even today I had a meeting with, I was part of a meeting, sorry, that included the National Congress, one of the co-chairs, Kirsty Parker, and she was speaking about how the ethnic community got behind the proposed changes and said you can't do it because they're protections, and the National Congress of Australia's First People also got behind this. So there was hundreds of submissions that went into, I think thousands.
Fantastic.
Actually.
Well done,
went
everyone.
Into, yeah, this,
you had a part of that.
This Brandis's offers, and so they're kind of backed down from those changes. So, yeah, lefty power.
Yeah.
Let's hear what we want to say. But speaking of lefties, we're going to get into Kath Duncan now.
So to speak.
it's like I need to kind of, it's like...
double entendre.
Because Celeste Little has actually pulled us up on that one, and she's like, you know, we have to do each other, and
yes,
she's like,
that's
oh my God, that sounds really,
that's
really
indecent.
Strange. Tad indecent if you want to look at it that way, but yeah, we're going to talk about Kath, and one of the interesting stories that I'd like to glean from you, Kath, tonight is just that you were once a young Liberal.
I was.
Make a confession. Tell us about those times.
I was once, at 16, I was made secretary of my Young Liberals branch in East Hills. The hilarious thing, East Hills is a safe Labor seat. Well, it was then. I'm assuming it still is. So the whole thing was an exercise in pointlessness, but I didn't realise that then, but I was. I was made secretary, and... you know, my parents were very conservative, you know, sort of verging on sort of right-wing fanatics, really, you know, that fascist, racist edge that right-wingers love to claim. And so that's how I grew up. And, you know, I wanted to get laid, I think, really. So I joined this
group.
You
thought about the Young Liberals as a way to get laid.
Well, if you can imagine, like, other kids were, like, doing church things. We weren't churchy. It was just, like, that thing about what your parents do. But somewhere in there, I was kind of a bit younger than other people, and I did my HSC, did quite well. I did economics and did quite well in economics, and then I was going to Sydney Uni, and it was in the first few months of Sydney Uni, that first half year, I moved away from home. I moved into Newtown, which was not a groovy place then, believe it or not. Well, it was a lot less groovy. This is in Sydney, and one day I was going to uni, and there I was being happy secretary of the Young Liberals, and coming towards me along the pavement was a woman pushing a pram, and in the pram was a baby with no booties, and it was cold. It's this time of year, you know. And she walked past me, and I watched her. And you know, that baby, that unknown random baby, changed my life, because I went into uni, sat through another lecture on political economics, which was fabulous, and I thought, this is all just nonsense. I have been believing some load of bullshit for quite some time now, and I don't want to believe this anymore, because this is really how people live. We're not all privileged. We don't all, you know, want to, you know, grow up and be corporate leaders, because some of us just will never get there. And I wrote a letter of resignation to my Young Liberals branch, and I went home, and when you're secretary, you're given all their records. And so I went home and burnt them all. Yeah.
How'd you do that, like in your parents' backyard?
Yeah, no, my parents live in this, I grew up in this fabulous block of land southwest of Sydney, near Bankstown, sort of in the suburbs, but near a creek. And we had a huge backyard. It was a couple of acres. And there was this lovely spot. We used to have fires, and I just hauled all these boxes of crap down there and set them all ablaze.
Set it ablaze,
yeah.
Tell us about a story from the inside, from the Young Liberals. I mean, what were meetings like? What were some of the ideologies that were thrown about?
No, you know, it is years and years ago now, but what I do remember is a very drunken ferry
not ferry, a very drunken harbour ride on MP so-and-so whatnot St. Snotburger's yacht. And we were, you know, gliding along drinking cheap plonk. Why do conservatives always drink terrible alcohol? But anyway, so we're going along. And I just remember, you know, being very privileged and very, very relieved, looking down on the peasants down there, you know. And this sort of born to rule thing. And I actually started to feel uncomfortable with it then.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's – I don't remember the meetings at all, but I remember the yacht trip, yeah.
And so
– how did your family take the news, basically having to come out as a lefty?
They didn't take it well. We still don't talk politics. I have one sister, so there were five kids. I have one sister who's closest to me in age, and she's another lefty, but that's it. And in the rest of the family, including their offspring, they're all sort of conservatives. And so family gatherings, we don't talk politics because it does get very heated, and particularly with my father, who's now dead. It got very heated with Dad. He just couldn't get his head around the fact that his daughter saw things very differently from him. And my mother still picks arguments with me as well, which I walk away from. So, yeah, no, they haven't enjoyed it at all.
And so, I mean, how would you define yourself politically now? Like, yeah,
well,
you're not
a
young liberal anymore.
No. You know, I was really lucky. I have never voted for them, ever. Mm-hmm. I never, ever got a chance to.
Because you weren't
on
voting age, were you?
Yeah, I was just below it. And by the time I got to be 18, it was all over. They say, yeah, I'm just sort of a generalised lefty, but I'm a kind of, you know, disability pride kind of person. I think that's my real politics these days, a kind of difference and stuff.
I've heard monikers around radicalised freak. Or, I mean, tell us about freak quarter. What's a freak in your sense? Or
well,
your own words.
Most people consider the word freak to be an insult. And I guess, you know, if someone doesn't know my work and calls me a freak, it might be, but I would still probably take it as a compliment. Basically, freaks, you know, from the sort of historical kind of perspective, people who are different, circus performers, you know, people marked as different, incurable kind of folk. And I was born different with two limbs sort of not there and other little changes around my body. And so I was always different. I was always treated differently. And then must have been in my 30s when I started to meet more sort of performers and writers who were disabled. I started to see that there's actually a power in this, that it's not about, oh, poor bugger me, you know, just think about my abilities, not my disabilities and all that sad shit, that it's actually about being...
Sympathy, not empathy, or empathy, not sympathy.
It's actually about being different and powerful because, like, even in performance, and I do perform, I walk on stage, half my work is done for me. Everybody else has got to go on there with bells and whistles and all this shit, and all I have to do is walk out there and people
captivate
watching.
Captivate an audience.
You know, kind of, you can see this kind of, you know, this thing going on in their heads about what is this, you know, who is this person. And so it's been like that all my life. And at first it was like a major bummer. And then, you know, a few decades into my life, I started to think, no, this is a strength. This is very cool.
And sexuality-wise, how do you identify? Because, queer is something you've probably been...
kind of shifted around a bit, because, you know, I probably started off... Well, my first sort of affair was when I was sort of underage with a young woman who was also underage and, you know, at school, and we had fun together and stuff. I don't think it was really sexual, but it was certainly very affectionate. And then, you know, then I kind of got involved with boys and I got involved in theatre and I declared myself a bisexual for many decades. And then I decided I was a lesbian and then I decided I was queer. And now I'm kind of pansexual, I suppose. I'm in a relationship with a guy at the moment. It's sort like an affair. I don't really know what you call it, but I'm still open to...
Do you think he's listening tonight?
Hey?
Do you think he's listening?
I don't think he knows, actually. Okay. I just realised...
Keep it on the download of the old radio.
I haven't told him I'm on air. But yeah, so that's really... For me, sexuality is a movable feast. I know it's not like that for a lot of people. For me, my body, my freakery is the constant. My sexuality is very mobile.
Yeah. You're listening to Lefty Pinkos here. It's Brian, Emma and Lauren. We're grilling Kath Duncan, our co-host. She's loving it. We're going to play some of her music, though, and we'll be back with more chats. You're with Joy 94.9.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
You're with Lefty Pinkos here on Joy 94.9. It's Brian, Emma and Lauren, and we're chatting to Kath Duncan. You may know her from Joy 94.9's Lefty Pinkos, but we've got a bit of feedback and a message from Scotty, is it, Emma?
Message from Scotty. It says, "Hi, Lefty Pinkos. I come from Liberal parents, and once after an election when I voted Labor, I was talking to my dad on the phone And on hearing my vote, he said, okay, I'll put your mother on. He wasn't happy, whatever.
I can relate to that.
I can relate to that too.
If you've got a message you might want to throw to Kath or a any question or whatever, or any of us, you can SMS us in on 0427-JOY949. You can call Gordy out on the desk there at, on 1300-JOY949, or you can email us at onair@joy.org.au.
Now, Kath,
yes.
I think I wanted to start with probably, you know, radio career and media and that sort of area and where that began.
Oh, well, I was desperately unemployed and living in Darlinghurst in 1982, I think. No, 1983. And I saw this ad in the paper for a manager. Oh, I don't know what I was thinking. Of this thing in Sydney called Radio for the Print Handicapped, RPH. And, you know, you read out newspapers and stuff. And I thought, oh, I'm handicapped. Yeah, whatever. So I rang them up. And they said, well, no, Kath, you know, at 22 or whatever, you don't have the skills to be a manager, but why don't you come in and be a volunteer? And I found I really enjoyed being on air. And this friend of mine who I was working on RPH with came in one day boasting that he'd got a shift at Radio Skid Row. Yes, the Sydney institution that's still going some 20 or 30 years later or whatever. And I was so jealous that I rang up Skid Row because he said, no, play music and stuff, you know. And so I rang them up and asked to be a volunteer there. Got in no time at all, got my own show virtually the same day. And then in those days, this is like 30 years ago, the federal government had this great scheme that they called a community employment scheme. And under the terms of this scheme, any community group could apply for funding to have jobs and train people. And in the training, you had to have a certain number of people with disability or people from non-English speaking backgrounds or cold backgrounds, as we call them now. And so I went for one of those jobs and I got one. And so I'm one of the luckiest people in Australia, I think, who actually had formal news training within a community radio station that was as anarchic, weird and lefty as Radio Skid Row.
I've never heard Skid Row, but tell us about it. Cause,
oh, my God.
It's like, yeah.
Oh,
I know, it's
no,
a terrible
that's
thing
terrible.
To say and confess. It's oh. like saying you love Kylie Minogue. No, I'm kidding.
No, it's
but tell us about
worse.
Skid Row.
No, well, Radio Skid Row is a Sydney institution, and it started as actually a prisoner line. I don't know. In the old days before we actually could broadcast, they had like some landline set up that was like this limited, like CCTV only for radio, mm-hmm. which was a prisoner line. And basically they got funding from there, and it opened it up to be kind of like a, you know, disadvantaged urban dwelling, all different community groups, different language groups, Aboriginal groups, different people, all of us sort of broadcasting together. And it was absolute madness. I mean, it was the sort of thing you can only do in your 20s, really. But looking back, and unfortunately, it all came to a shuddering halt when our station manager kind of lost the plot a bit, put armed security guards in and locked us all out.
What?
And unfortunately, we were still in the middle of our grant, and so the very much more conservative radio station up the road, 2SER, picked up our grant. So I started at Radio Skid Row and ended up at 2SER, but actually, it all worked out really well. So yeah, everyone knows Radio Skid Row up there.
Yeah, I've only, it's just like a legend or almost a figment in my mind because I've never heard
ace.
It.
Yeah. Some of the most amazing present media producers in Australia came from Radio Skid Row.
Is it like 3CR for Melbourne, for example? Is that the equivalent?
Yes.
You think? Yeah.
Yes. A bit grungier. 3CR. When I first came to my first Community Broadcasting Association conference, it was down here in Melbourne, and 3CR had just opened up their new studios, and so we got to have a tour, and we were just like, oh, can you believe it? You know, and they these people consider themselves to be really, you know, scraping along and stuff. And we knew just, wow, these, you know, we could only aspire. Mm. So that's where it started.
And I think you've done plenty of other work in other forms of media as well, and disability work.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I guess, you know, I really took to radio like a duck to water. I ended up doing a degree at the Uni of Technology in Sydney doing arts communications there. And because I'd already been working in radio at that point, I then started work for the ABC and started working as a Triple J journalist, which is a really good experience, particularly being so obviously disabled. I must say it gave me a huge thrill to go along to big media events, you know, whether they were political ones, social ones, all sorts of events, you know, just book readings, whatever, and being the Triple J or ABC, you know, rep and being so obviously disabled. It was absolutely such a blast. I can't begin to tell you. And then, so that sort of trickled along. At UTS, I did film and video production. I didn't study radio because it was boring studying it when I was doing it. And ended up going to film school in Sydney, which is a very prestigious place to go. I got a scholarship to go there and do audio, you know, recording and post-production.
Was that afters or was
yeah,
that?
Yeah, afters, yeah. Amazing place to study, just amazing equipment. And because I'm so ancient, I got to see the transition from analog technology to digital technology. I sort of lived and produced through that change. So I can edit on Sprocket or I can edit digitally. I can kind of do both across a few different platforms. And that was a real privilege, I guess, to be there as the, you know, technology was, you know, transitioning and stuff. I ended up, you know, working for the ABC full time for a while. I made a very bizarre amputee fetish documentary with SBS TV. And that was a lot of fun. And from there, you know, I've just then started selling programs to Radio National, and that's where most of my, you know, disability production has come from, you know, working for the ABC and making stuff that basically nobody else was making. And I still recommend that today to anyone who wants to, you know, get involved in the industry, to make stuff that only you can make, you know, to tap into what is yours that nobody else can claim and make that, because it's just, you know, it's really quite revolutionary.
What's one of the more interesting, I mean, well, I guess what's your most, for want of a better term, favourite stories that you've brought about through radio?
Wow.
It's a big question, I know. It's wow. Like, it's kind of like, it's like,
I mean, yeah. We were talking to Emma before we came in here tonight, because Emma's starting to do this, and I was saying, you should always be nervous before you do an interview. Doesn't matter how many you've done. And I have probably done thousands.
Yeah,
like when you say my favourite, whoa.
What's a memorable one, the one that sort of sticks out in your mind as being something you felt like you nailed or you got something really big out of?
You know, sometimes the things that stand out are where you've actually failed.
Yeah.
Because you actually learn. I just remember I was there for the Redfern speech. Remember the Redfern speech? Keating, right?
Paul
when
Keating,
was that? 85?
88. No, 93 it was.
Sorry,
I think,
man.
With the World Indigenous Peoples, beginning of that.
I think it was 83.
It was 80, sorry, yeah.
Anyway.
I'm such a bad Aboriginal.
Everyone knows the Redfern speech, right? And that was the, you know, we will have a treaty. It was all nonsense, of course. But anyway, it sounded really good at the time. But to cut a long story short, I found a group of Aboriginal women and I was recording there for Triple J, and I thought, oh, ask them a few questions, you know. Anyway, so this one young lady had said this really great story at some point, and I asked her if she could record it, and she said, no, that's Auntie so-and-so's story. But I went to Auntie so-and-so. She was happy to tell it, but I couldn't understand a word she said. And so I was there going, oh, no. And, you know, and this and that and the other. And I turned to one other lady and I said, because it was mainly about education, really, that whole rave. Was actually, a lot of it was about education. And I remember turning to another lady and saying, so why? sometimes things are embarrassing that you did once, okay? So I remember just saying to her, so why is education important for Aboriginal people? And she snorted, you know, and she sort of goes to me, why was education important for you? And I just, you know, look, honestly, I could talk about thousands of interviews where I've heard great stories, but that is really sad, because I remember my mouth fell open.
Yeah.
I just remember, like, just thinking, oh, I'm an idiot. And it's those moments that I think really teach you about the craft.
Yeah.
Like, and about your position.
Yeah.
You know, and your position to the other. And so, you know, honestly, I could just rattle on with great interviews I've done, but that is a standout of me going, oh, oops, yeah.
Well, if it's any consolation, I mean, there is a bit of a divide around Indigenous and non-Indigenous affairs in this country. And so it's kind of, it can be a sensitive hard line to
but we
traverse.
All, we all want to think we're cool, you know.
Yeah,
I wanted to think
too,
I was cool and I was
with
not
the Triple
cool.
J kind of, you know, Zoom recorder and whatnot.
Yeah. And I was very uncool.
Yeah. You're listening to Lefty Pinkos here on Joy 94.9. It's Emma, Lauren and Brian talking to Kath Duncan, our co-host who's on the way out. We'll be back after these announcements.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
Bloody oath, you'd be effed in the head if you listen to something else. You're listening to Joy.
A perennial favourite there with you.
Lefty Pinkos, yeah, we do love her. She's my favourite idea. I pull her out whenever I'm, you know, thinking station tags and stuff. And
we give her a run.
We do, but she's a brilliant performer and she's a funny woman. She's got some great books out.
Yeah.
And just a little heads up, people, I sort of was, you know, in bed the other night looking at the ABC iView, and she's on the current version of the movie show. So her and some other guy host
it. Yes, that guy, yeah.
And she's always good for a laugh.
Yeah.
Like, she's just hilarious
she's
in her reviews.
She's got this really flat, deadpan delivery that I measured that I love. Yes.
Yeah, it's gold. So check it out on ABC iView, but not before you tune out from Joy 94.9.
No, stay with us.
Lefty Pinko's here. It's Emma, Lauren and Brian, and we're chatting to Kath Duncan.
Yeah.
And, I guess, Kath, we want to talk about how you came to Melbourne, because you're a bit of a Northern New South Wales chick.
Yeah, and I was totally a rainbow feral freak bunny up there in the hills. I left Sydney in 96 to work with ABC Lismore, which is about 2,000 k north of you.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up working for that whole year, and then at the end I talked to my boss and he said, well, you can work in Sydney or Melbourne. And I said, I'd like to take leave without pay and stay up here, because I'd fallen in love not just with a very significant person in my life, but with the area, which is, I'm just, you know, it's goddess's own country. I'm just going to be really upfront about that up there. But what ended up happening, I fell out of love with that person and fell in love with another person. We bought a house together. I helped Tyron, was her name, raise three kids together. We were together for 7 years. And then towards the end of 2009, we broke up, and it was a terrible breakup. I mean, terrible. Worst breakup of my life. And in January 2010, I moved to Melbourne basically to get away. I ran away from a relationship that was, you know, eating itself alive or something. We sold the house. Hate. And the hatred lasted for about 9 months. And then myself and Tyron, even though I was still in Melbourne, we kept in touch, and there were lots of things to keep in touch about, not excluding two fluffy dogs that I now have. And then Tyron, as it turned out, from the moment I left her, was only due to have three more years on the planet. And if I'd known, it might have turned out a little differently. But, you know, you don't know these things. And so 18 months after we broke up, Tyron got a very bad cancer diagnosis. And then in December 2012, Tyron died. And during all that time, I stayed in Melbourne. Certainly stayed away from relationships. And, you know, that's basically why I'm here, really. You know, sort of getting through, you know, the breakup, finding other work, finding things to do. I always wanted to live in Melbourne, because I'd fallen in love with Melbourne when I was about 20, in my early 20s. Came down here for a union conference, got dumped at one end of Brunswick Street, and my friend said, we'll meet you at the other end of Brunswick in, you know, a few hours or whatever. And I had never seen civilization like that in Australia. I thought, you know, because Sydney people are very Sydney centric, and, you know, life ends at the airport, at Leichhardt, the Harbour Bridge, you know, and there's like this 5K radius of influence, and everything else after that is, you know, the abyss.
Doesn't exist.
But I realised that there was civilization on a scale I'd never met it before down here. And so I fell in love with Melbourne, kept coming back, mainly due to the Hares and Hyenas crew, who started bringing me down here in about 2000, 2001. I started coming down here for cultural events and just realised that there were all sorts of differences about Melbourne. In a way, the fact that it wasn't the grooviest place in Australia meant that rents were cheaper, meant that people could take risks with performance, with art, with music, with culture, with art, with creativity across the board. And I realised that ultimately Northern New South Wales was very lovely, but it's, you know, it's a bit small. I'd done every decent job in the place and had nowhere else to go. And so, you know, a breakup and, oh, I know, I'm going to move to Melbourne and just start a new life happened at the same time.
I'm interested to hear a bit more about your performance background as well. What you've done, are you still performing?
Hell yeah. Yeah, no, when I was a little girl, I think the doctors must have told Mum that it would be good if Catherine got some confidence doing some drama, you know, in front of people and all that, and in speaking and la la. And so when I was sort of six, I started doing drama classes with our neighbour up the road, who was an actor, and we did performances every year. And by the time I was 12, I was at high school, no longer doing that. When I was in my early 20s, I started doing more drama again. But what had happened was that, I just remember a few sort of dance workshops where I was pulled from being at the front of the room because I was offending everyone and made to do the same sort of exercise at the back of the room where people couldn't see me and stuff. And there's this one exercise I did with another group I tried where you were to imitate the walk of the person in front of you across this room, and people were lining up to do me because everyone else was boring. I remember just going, oh, God, you know, I just – anyway, so – but – So I kept kind of just writing stuff and performing it, turned a lot of it into audio. And it wasn't until I discovered disability arts, probably about 10 years ago, that I finally found my performing home. So right now I started doing these dance intensive / performance intensive workshops with Arts Access Australia, Weave Movement Theatre and Dance House in Carlton. And it's sort of like this inclusive sort of hot housing of people for a few months. And so I'm now doing that every Sunday, and it's already, we've only done one session so far, but it's like,
is it great?
Awesomeness, man. I'm no longer weird. I'm with all these weird people. I'm no longer the weird one with the problem. It's amazing.
Is the class full? Because I mean, not that I want to get involved, but just how many people are there? And
I think must have been about 12 of us. Yeah. All different. It's like the United Nations of impairments.
Like the Benetton ad of impairments.
Yes, totally.
What will happen? Like once you finish this, was it 12 weeks? Is it?
I think it's 8 weeks.
8 weeks. What will happen? Will you do a performance? Or
well, you wouldn't believe what's happening at the end. I'm just so excited. Oh my god, we're running out of time. We've hardly said anything. Look, Carolyn Bowditch, who's a Melbourne person, yep, and very well known down here, is flying all the way in from the UK to take us on our last weekend towards the end of September. I'm just so excited about that. I could cry.
And so what are you doing with her? Like, you're just going to like a workshop with her?
She's going to hothouse us for 3 whole days.
Yeah.
Look, it's amazing. You know, you get into this kind of like, everything's cool. I can just like let this body just do whatever in front of whoever I am.
Yep.
I no longer have any embarrassment, self-consciousness whatsoever, just like letting it loose. And I've already been doing like performing kind of stuff, mainly around erotica, really. And so I'm going to bring these two things together, this sort of extra kind of performance ability, like in terms of movement, with my bizarre stuff that I'm already doing, and see what happens.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, I'm not going to play our ads, and I'll play this last song next, but I guess, yeah, any questions you might want to ask of Kath before we wrap things up for this week on Lefty Pinkos?
I don't have any questions. I think it's just been fascinating. Yeah. Like, I got to read a little bit about you in the last couple of days leading up to the show, and I just think, yeah, that you've got such an interesting background. It's been really good to hear from you tonight.
Thanks so much, guys. I just want to say thanks also to our loyal listenership out there who've been with us. We think this show's been running, and Brian and I've been presenting it together for 12, 15, 16 months.
15 months or so.
So, you know, just want to say it's such a ride. I'm still going to be around for a few weeks as we sort of do the transition. But essentially, yeah, I'm going.
And I guess, yeah, next week on Lefty Pinkos, we're going to bring in Marie Clark, who is an amazing, sumptuous Aboriginal artist. She's actually got a group exhibition down at 45 Downstairs.
Oh, wow, really?
It's on at the moment. I actually popped into to see the work just before I got into the studios tonight. And, yeah, she's a traditional Aboriginal artist in the sense that she creates jewellery that basically echoes past observances, and so it's all kind of traditionally done with, you know, animal bones, teeth, kangaroo sinew, feathers, beautiful stuff. So if you can go and check it out, it's at 45 Downstairs until about the 18th of August, I think it is. But check it out. We're going to have Marie Clark in next week. And also, I just want to give a bit of a plug, because the week after that, we're going to get in Richard Franklin, who is another Aboriginal person. It's very Aboriginal of late. But we'll get Richard Franklin in. He's got a show on at the Malt House, and it's called Walking into the Bigness. And it opens tomorrow night, 1st of August.
Oh, really?
Oh, sorry, no, it started previewing on the 1st of August. It opens tomorrow night, and it goes until the 23rd of August. So we're going to bring Uncle Richard in to chat about his show, Walking into the Bigness. He's got a fascinating life. He used to be a field officer with the Royal Commission into Aboriginal Deaths in Custody.
Oh, wow.
And so he's been to hell and back, basically, but he's very generous in his art. He's an acoustic guitarist, a singer, songwriter, a poet, a writer, a playwright. He doesn't really get into acting much, but he's assembled an amazing cast around an amazing script that they're presenting at Malthouse. So we'll get him in a couple of weeks' time to chat about him and his work and his production. So yeah, if you can check that out too, it's down at the Malthouse Theatre, Walking into the Bigness. See it, and then we'll get Uncle Richard in to talk. But yeah, thanks for a beautiful show, Kath, and I guess for divulging that threat of you're on tonight
has finally come to fruition. Yes,
yes, but thanks too to Emma and Lauren, my co-hosts. You've been listening to the Lefty Pinkos here on Joy 94.9. This is our last track from Kath. It's Amy. It's an Amy Winehouse track. And do you want to maybe tell us which one it is?
Which one did I pick?
Mr. Jones.
Mr. Jones. Yeah. Oh, look,
why is that?
It's a cover of an old 50s or 60s girly kind of song, except it's got a few extra very Amy Winehouse words in there. If you're slightly offended by a swearing, just a moment, please go away for the next 3 minutes.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.